So here we are in week three. The title that I've given this week it has to do with the question of location and locatedness. And so I started calling it dislocating space. So that's the plan and the intention. Now I want to start with the practice. The practice is with the breath, and I was intending to do that anyway, but I'll just point out that if you go to the discussion section, several of the comments in this past week had to do with the benefits of focusing on the breath. And I want to say something about that, but first I want to do it. We'll start with the breath, and it'll kind of be in two parts. So we'll spend a couple of minutes with that, and let's do it in a way that I think we've talked about before, just a focus on the breath in the body. So the diaphragm moving up and down, the rib cage moving in and out. So there's a lot of movement associated with the breath, and it's all it all has to do with embodiment, or at least that's a very important aspect of it. And a couple of people pointed out in the comments that focus on the breath helps to direct our attention away from thoughts, which is what usually occupies us. So just take a couple of minutes. We'll work with the breath in that way. Just let it be embodied. And then I'll give you another suggestion. Okay, now staying with awareness of the breath, let your awareness, as you're breathing, let your awareness expand out so that you're inhabiting the whole of space. We've talked about inhabiting. So it's not that somehow your physical presence goes outside the body. You might experience that, but more just a question, here you are in space, and you're not confined to the body, right? You're aware of the whole of space. You're inhabiting the whole of space as you breathe, as you're centered on the body. Okay. So if anybody wants to comment on that, now's the time. Or if someone wants to write a chat, or write in the chat box, I guess we say. Okay. It's a practice I think in general we're already kind of familiar with, so we don't have to talk about it. I want to talk about it. I do want to say something about it. A couple of weeks ago, Klaus wrote in the on the discussion page, he quoted a line which I then looked up. I may have mentioned this last week. It's a line from Sacred Dimensions, which says, "Space is all the therapy we need." Space is all the therapy we need. And breath actually puts us in touch with space. I see that David wrote here, he says, about the breath, about the practice, like an accordion expands, awareness just expanded. There's a beautiful image about the breath that was in one of the first books I ever read about Buddhism. It's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki. And he says, breathing is like a swinging door. It swings open, it swings shut, it swings open, it swings shut. It's got this very, in that sense, very spacious quality. But even if we don't focus it on the breath is a good way to get in contact with that. Space is available. And available in this case, I think, has to do with inhabiting space or being present in space, to space, with space, any way you want to say that. Klaus wrote about the exercise. There's a commingling, which he associates with time, between inner and outer space. And that's a good point. And we're going to talk about that actually quite a bit today. This whole sense of inner and outer. The breath is a good way into that. So when we say space is the only therapy we need, or all the therapy we need, there's a couple of levels of that, and I wanted to point to that. I think the first one is related to what I said earlier, that I am wanting to invite a participation in the TSK vision that is kind of friendlier, warm and friendly. In Sacred Dimensions, Rinpoche talks about space as being warm, and kind of like coming home. And I think in that sense, being aware of space is very, 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 very helpful. Years ago, I remember Steve Randall, whom a number of you know, was excited about some research that was done in the public schools, in a school system somewhere. They found that if the young children just went outdoors and they lay down on their backs and they looked up at the sky, and that was the intervention, as they say in psychology, that was all they did. Their test scores went up, and their behavior in class improved. That's kind of a level of space as therapy, which is really important. And as I said, I'm trying to emphasize it a little bit now because, as you know, TSK has this reputation of being kind of heady and intellectual and difficult and challenging. And I think that if we remind ourselves that contacting space, and right now we're focused on space, so I won't say anything about time, but if we just go to that level, there's a relaxation, and focusing on breath is a good way to do that. I think it's very, very valuable, and you don't need to overthink your experience with space. So that's one side. The other side, though, is that when we do these practices, or when we inhabit space or we're present in space, we're also always using that as an occasion to really investigate our relationship to space. And so it's not only that kind of warm quality. It's both. And I think it's interesting to compare that to compare that to a practice like mindfulness, you know, which is so popular now. And I think we may have talked about it already. So, you know, working with the breath is very, very, very important or valuable. It's a very important part of mindfulness practice. And I think it's going more toward that kind of warm space quality, you know, the kind of supportive, allowing, loosening so that you come out of your head, you come out of your thoughts. I think that's really, really valuable and a part of what we're doing. There is also this other side. And I think that's something that we can add in or add on. You know, there's an invitation here to be differently, to by engaging space, we can be different. Or that's not quite the right way to say it. Our way of being can change. Yes. Okay, well, that's nicely put and really valuable, I think. And it is kind of amazing that just, you know, a fairly simple practice like this, just working with the breath, if we come at it from this perspective, I think has great power. I'm going to try to summarize a little bit what you said, because as I mentioned the other day, for some reason, when I record, people's voices don't get recorded. So it's going to be a very rough summary, because you said you had quite a bit there. But basically saying that very quickly, when you're practicing, when you work with the breath like that, the sense of identity loosens and lets go. The body, this is my language now, the body kind of takes over. You don't need to be the self that's maintaining the practice. And the sense of identity, in fact, becomes more of a momentary thing. It's and inside and outside, that distinction loosens too. So, yeah. So I'm just parroting back, just not very well. I apologize, but yeah, I think that's great. That's exactly the direction we want to go in. And in a sense, part of what we're doing in this class is we do these practices, and there's a whole There's a lot of different practices we can do, and they all kind of, you might say, they highlight different facets of our relationship to space. At least that's the intention. And then there's a framework for it, and I'm really trying to present a framework in which, you know, these ways we have of being in space that have to do with being located in a particular place and being separate from the objects that we encounter and so on. We'd like to challenge that framework. So there's the kind of theoretical side. I'm not sure that's the word I want to use, but I'm using it. There's the kind of theoretical side, which is a kind of, it has to do with vision. You know, I mean, what's the purpose of thoughts after all, or what's the purpose of theory? The purpose of theory, which is related, by the way, to the word seeing, right? I mean, the Greek theoria actually has to do with seeing. And the word ideas, as you know, has to do with seeing. So seeing and knowing are very closely related. But the purpose of a theory, let's say, is to allow for a different vision. You know, we have a theory. I mean, that's the thing. We're all philosophers, you know, we're all theorists. We all go around the world every day with our theory of what's going on, which we use as a kind of an overlay on our sense impressions. And so if we open up the theory, then things become very interesting. And that's part of what we're trying to do. Let's see. I want to go back to a couple of comments people made about this. Michael wrote, the ocean has blown in from the coast. The wind blows over the mountain and arrives here. He's out there in New Mexico, way far away from the ocean. So he's tracing it way back. Time knits together the trees, breathing into my body, and provides me with another day. Well, that's very lovely. And again, it's very interesting. So much comes up. Just the moment we kind of relax into space, or we're present in space, or the word that I want to use really is we inhabit space. Klaus has a nice comment here. He said, if we were more aware of space in daily experience, tourism would collapse. I like that. We wouldn't have to go anywhere, right? Because wherever we go, space is there. So let me say something now about inhabiting. We've talked about it before. We've practiced with it. This was a practice, I would say, in inhabiting space. The main point I want to make is to make a distinction between being located or locatedness in space and inhabiting space. You know, things are located in space, and our tendency is to say that we're located in space too, because I'm sitting in this chair, you know, here I am located in space. Somebody can point me out and know exactly where I am. But that, of course, is the body. And we identify very strongly with the body, but it's not completely accurate. At the very least, let's say for now, and we'll continue to look at this question, but at the very least, there's more going on. I'm not just my body. If I were my body, I would be like a rock or a tree or anything else. You know, I would be located in space. The body, that's its job, you could say, is to be located in space. But the inhabiting side is has to do with everything we think of when we talk about our interior experience. I'm not wanting to stay with the idea of inside and outside. As Ken said, that begins to give way when we inhabit space. But all of the things that we would say, I think, make for human experience, which we often think of as being inside, are not captured by the idea of being located in space, being the body in space. You know, there are our thoughts, there are our feelings, there are our sensations, there's our moods, our emotions, our attitudes, everything that we pretty much say, well, that's who we are. That's not captured by the idea of being located. It is related to inhabiting space, but that actually goes in a direction, I don't want to get too complicated about that. So let's not worry about that right now. What I'd like to do is do another practice that is meant to engage this question of inhabiting space. Another way you could talk about it is being present, is being fully present. So space is what allows, space is what accommodates. And so here we are in space, and usually, and it's most clear when we notice what's going on with thinking, for instance, usually we're not present in space at all. Now, the relationship between thinking and space is something we'll look at later. But just now, in terms of here we are, we're embodied, we're present. But in fact, we usually aren't present. We absent ourselves, or the way we started to talk about it in this six-week session is we're bystanders to experience. We step outside, or Michael used that nice image last week of being like a child that's looking in a window at all the toys in a toy store that's closed, you know, and wishing it were inside. Or in German, one of the attempts that's been made to translate bystander into German, but it was done by the translator of Dynamics, was the word Soundgast. And it's a nice term. I don't know if it really works, but a Soundgast is somebody who hasn't been invited to a party but is sitting on the fence wishing they were there, you know, kind of not like that. So that's the difficulty. We're not present. We don't inhabit space. So here's the practice. It's going to be a practice that involves seeing, in this case. You could start by focusing on the body, if you like. Let your eyes, so relax and let your eyes wander around the room. Usually when we do that, or when we look at something, but even if we just let our eyes wander casually, we're observing, right? We're taking things in. And in this case, this time, instead of doing that, just be present to space. Just inhabit space. So you will see all of the things in space, you know, because your eyes are looking around. But the focus is not on the things that you see, or especially not on seeing them. It's on being present in space, and you're kind of letting the objects in space define that space, you know, make it substantial for you. But the practice is just being present in space. Okay, let's do that for a couple of minutes. Okay. So I'll say a little bit about that, but of course, in the meantime, I invite you to share your experience. We already have a couple of comments, so let's look at that. So Lee says, this practice reminds me of experiencing three-dimensional virtual reality, appreciating and also capturing the space we find ourselves in. It seems to reveal environments as constructs. Yeah, that's it's an interesting question. What are we going to learn about space? Because I think that this 3D, three-dimensional virtual reality possibility, my guess is that within a few years that will become an element in many people's experience. And I mean, to some extent, I guess it's there with video games now, but it's not three-dimensional. Anyway, I think we'll learn something about space and about our possibilities for space. But I don't know what it is, I haven't had that experience, and we'll have to see how it goes. I do think, I mean, my hunch is, or my expectation is that there's going to be a little bit of a difference because it is, after all, going to be virtual reality. And maybe we could think of an example, which is one that I've used. I don't remember if I've used it in this class, but if you think of your car, let's say, if you have one of those, or your bicycle, or whatever, when you think of your car, presumably an image of your car comes into mind, unless you're worried about how you have to buy tires for it or something. So an image of your car comes into mind, and with that image comes an environment, right? You can't just see the car; you have to take a certain perspective on it, and so you're also imagining, imagining the space that the car is located in. So I don't know, 3D, when you talk about an environment, it seems like that space that you're imagining for the car is an environment for the car, but it's just imaginary. It's not the space that we embody. So I don't know. Well, it's an interesting question. What is the relationship between environments, and or is space an environment in that sense, or is there something more going on? I, just to talk about my experience when we did the practice just now, I had a strong sense of kind of relationship, right? So here are these things in the room, and in being present, it was like a very, it was a very at-home feeling. I suppose it's a little bit like what you experience if you've been traveling and you come back home and everything feels familiar and friendly, maybe that's related. Okay, David writes, sound of clock ticking, bees outside the glass door, buzzing in the sun. Walls are here, but not boundaries to being aware of space beyond them. Trees and leaves in the space of a blue dome of clear sky, feeling the openness of my own allowing. Yeah, the openness, feeling the openness and the allowing. I don't know if I'd say my allowing. I mean, you can say that because we're doing the practice and we're allowing something to happen. But on another level, it's space that's doing the allowing, right? Yes. Being as space. Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a way to do it. Some people, I mean, you may not know exactly what that means, but it's definitely worthwhile to contemplate as a possibility, to be as space. Let's see if I can. I have to mute this person. Okay. Yeah, another thing I was thinking about in terms of language is if you say being present, you could talk about being present too. You know, so things appear, and if we're present, we're present in a particular way because other things are present to us. I think it's a little dangerous to talk that way. Because it very quickly sounds like the bystander, you know, it sort of takes us back into bystander experience. But if you could keep the sense of presence and at the same time acknowledge that we have this quality which allows other things to appear to us, that kind of goes in a good direction, I think. The thing that's going on here, and the thing I want to point out, and then I want to do some more practice. I really, it seems helpful at this point to really be doing some practice. So the thing I want to point out is that we have a theory about space, our usual understanding of space. I'm using theory and understanding interchangeably here. Maybe I shouldn't. Let me go back to thinking, a theory rather. We have a theory about space. And our theory is that it somehow is only physical. That's our ordinary understanding when we use the word space, right? That is to say, well, it goes along with the idea that things are located in space or that things occupy space. And then there's this funny thing because, you know, our body is located in space, but as I've said, we, you know, our thinking and our reacting and so on doesn't seem to be located in space. So somehow we're outside of space. That's part of the bystander model. We're located through the body, but we're also outside of space, you could say. But what we're looking at now when we talk about inhabiting space is that awareness, the awareness that allows things to appear is itself allowed by space. And I think that might be why you could say, Ken, that you know, we can be as space. Maybe we could say our awareness is itself space. Right? And that is not, you know, sometimes things get said in TSK and people say, oh, that's heavy, but I sure as heck don't know what it means, you know. So, you know, if you say awareness as space. But what I'm trying to really suggest here is that awareness, it's not, we're not saying anything complicated. We're not saying anything out of the ordinary. It's just that we're always aware and we're always engaging space. Inhabiting space, and what it means to inhabit space is that our awareness, our sense awareness, which is how we encounter objects in space, right? We see them, we touch them, we hear them, and so on. The awareness itself is allowed by space. Awareness is itself spatial. That's what it means to talk about inhabiting space. Instead of just being located in space. And that's one way of saying that is that what we're doing now is we're really trying to dislocate space or not be confined by our ordinary sense that all that we can do with space is locate things in space. I want to go do a little more practice on the senses. Let me go back and look at the comment that Michael made on that last exercise. So Michael's happy with his trees. The tree in my backyard, he writes, is exploring the space that allows it to grow. That's very nice. You could say we're always, you know, that is kind of what we're doing, especially in the practice we did. You know, we're exploring the space that allows us to be present in this special inhabiting way. So the tree in my backyard is exploring the space that allows it to grow. As I watch its branches waving in a slight breeze, I realize that it is allowing me to know the space that it is probing and inhabiting. Everything, including my own being, is inhabiting the space that allows it to be and which allows us to be given together. Yeah, again, very nice. There's a story by Ursula Le Guin that I recommend from time to time. I can't remember the name of it right now. It's something like A Tree by the Road. I'll try to remember to link to it, or I actually have a scan of it that I could put on the website. And the reason I thought of it is it's about trees. It's about the awareness. The tree in this story in particular has a special awareness. And, you know, when I was reading your comment here, Michael, I started thinking, well, maybe I'm not being fair to objects. You know, when I say, well, objects can't inhabit, you know, only human beings and maybe probably animals and so on, but not, you know, objects are just things. Well, of course, trees are sentient beings. So, maybe that's still has to do with inhabiting, but I do want to be fair. I want to be fair to trees and flowers and so on. Okay, so let's do. We're going to do a round of practices here that have to do with the senses, I think that's all we'll have time to do. It goes to this idea of awareness being allowed by space. Awareness is being inseparable from space. And you know, inseparable from space is interesting here because we usually say, of course, in TSK it gets challenged, but we usually say that objects are separate from space. And that's because we think of objects as being located in space. With sense experience isn't really located in space. That's part of what we want to explore here. In what sense? So I just said that. That's my claim. But let's explore it in the practice. Let's just start with awareness. And awareness shows up through the senses. Let's start with touch, and we've already done this in the way. So when I say touch here, you could look at touch, but I really have more in mind embodiment. So here we are. We have a sense of the body, right? And it's like the it's breathing practice we did before. It's a kind of it's embodied practice, or embodiment is global. That's really what I'm saying. So it expands out into space beyond the body, maybe, but it doesn't have to. Just be aware of your embodiment, of your body. And the awareness isn't separate. The awareness, or let me put it this way. I didn't say that very well. Let me try again. It's not a question of being aware of your body. It's a question of awareness. And it's a sensing awareness. It's a touching, embodying awareness. Right? There's no separation. It's just the sensing. Let's try that for a couple of minutes, then we'll move on to a different sense. Okay, so now let's shift to hearing. And here it's easier to talk about. We're interested in the hearing, not so much in the sounds. So the sounds are a part of what you hear. I mean, the sounds are what you hear. That's one way of talking about it and thinking about it. But there's also the hearing. So when we talk about sound, we just automatically assign a location to the sound, and then we're caught up in that way of looking at things. So instead of doing that, let's just be aware of the activity of hearing. And that means that it's going to be a global awareness. So sounds come in from all over, right? So not this, there are specific sounds, but they come in from all over in that global field of hearing. That's what we want to be aware of. Okay, and now for a few minutes, let's do seeing. And so in the beginning, let it be, as with hearing, let it be very global, in the sense that your eyes are open and you're taking in everything that is within your field of vision, but you're not focused on any particular thing. Okay, and now to vary that just a little bit, focus on particular objects. You can let your eyes move through the room or wherever it is you're located, but in the same way. So not that there's you seeing the object, even though our language pretty much has to say it that way, but there's a seeing. And what is seen and who's doing the seeing are a part of the seeing, but the seeing itself is global. Okay, so I want to give people a couple of minutes to comment. I've muted everybody, I think. So I think you have to raise your hand. You have a way to do that down below if you want to. Oh, you can unmute yourself. Great. Okay. Thanks. That's easier. Go ahead. If you want to say something, unmute yourself. Okay. So yeah, again, to summarize, the sense that you know, maybe everything is aware, everything is feeling its way. It's a kind of a network, right? A kind of, I don't know if it helps to put this label on it, but people talk about panpsychism. It's kind of like that. Yes, I think that possibility then opens up. What I want to say about it, I guess, is that, and then we really should stop, is one possible way of understanding experience is the kind of bystander mode, right? In which I'm here and somehow I can reach out and connect to things, you know, through my senses. That's a model. It's a theory. It's the one we usually use, and it depends on a particular understanding of space being in operation, which is in, so that things are located in space, and I have my own special kind of space somehow, or special relationship to space as the bystander. It's kind of mysterious, but there it is. If you let go of that model, then the possibility arises that there could be a knowing or a feeling or a sensing that is much more global. And I think that's what you're pointing toward, Michael. It's still, well, let me say that both of those arise out of, both of those theories arise out of the possibilities that come up when you realize that space allows sense awareness, you know, that it's not, I mean, it's also just a theory. It's a way of talking, but it's, I think it's pointing or trying to point towards something that's very, very rich and can open in many different ways. When we see, if we focus on the seeing instead of on what's seen and the seer, the seeing is not located. The seeing pervades space insofar as we're aware of it, right? It's everywhere. And that's kind of what I mean by dislocating space. So there's this aliveness, there's this space aliveness, which is a knowing aliveness. You know, we as the subject are not the one that brings knowing to the picture. The knowing is there in the sensing, and it's our sensing. You know, we claim ownership of it, but it doesn't. That's another story we tell. Okay, let's leave it there for today. I think there's a lot of richness there, and we'll continue with this exploration next time. Thank you very much, everybody.